to Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. A number of people are spending their summer vacations traveling America's national parks. Last week, we focused on the eastern half of the United States. This week, we're heading west with Elaine LaBalme, a contributing editor of the e-zine Pop City, who tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town. Elaine LaBalme, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Great to be here.
Okay, New Girl, you had some terrific suggestions last week for national parks in the eastern United States. Now we're heading to the great outdoors west of the Mississippi. So what should we expect?
Well, I'll say this. It's very different. You've got these big open spaces in the national parks of the West. And that said, you need to expect crowds because they are just so highly trafficked during the summer months. That's not to say that you shouldn't go in the summer. Places like Yellowstone and Yosemite are certainly more appealing in the summer months, but just so that you have that expectation set. And I would say that these parks are the ones that are ideally suited for adventurers because you've got really tall peaks. You've got bigger animals. You think, you know, the bears and the bison and whatnot. So it lends itself to people with a sense of adventure. Those are the ones who are going to want to visit these large, expansive parks.
Once again, you've got your top five picks, and I know that this wasn't easy for you. You're a longtime West Coaster.
Yep.
So let's start with what I understand is your favorite national park, bar none, Yosemite.
Goodness me, it absolutely is. This is probably my favorite thing in California. Yosemite National Park is just the gem of the national park system in the U.S., and I'll debate that with anyone. But it's the one that was memorialized by Ansel Adams, the photographer, in so many great black and white photos. You've got those granite peaks rising right to the top, as it does, is Half Dome, and this is the iconic hike in that park, and people will want to do it. And I did it myself, 15, 20 years ago, and I actually got one of the permits to sleep at the top overnight. In July, it was still 20 degrees that night. I'm sure that my friends and I didn't sleep a wink that night, but you can, in fact, apply for one of the licenses to be able to sleep at the top. I think maybe 25 to 50 are handed out per day. The hike is not for the faint of heart. The last, 900 feet or something, you have to hold on to some chains, some handrails.
I was going to say, how do you get up there?
Well, very carefully. So it's not for everyone, but it's certainly worth trying. And you can absolutely take the hike. You just can't stay at the top again unless you have the license. But there's lots of other great hikes. Vernal Falls, Nevada Falls. Those are the hikes. Yes, Yosemite Falls. And in fact, they have waterfalls right alongside each of them. Something to consider if you can get a room at the inn is the Awani Lodge. Again, also arguably the most spectacular lodge in the national park system. It is just so lovely, the beams, the great room at the Awani. Everything about the place is just magic. So if you can do it, you should.
Next up is Yellowstone National Park, Old Faithful, Buffalo. It's all there.
It's absolutely all there. This was actually the first national park in the system. The bears, the wolves, the bison, the elk. And, of course, Old Faithful is there. It's still popping off on cue every 90 minutes. It was the very first thing I did on my one and only visit to Yellowstone National Park. There's much more to do, though, obviously. There's hiking, biking, boating, fishing. You can do lots of things. But you're going to the park is so expansive. I mean, it goes through three different states, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming. You're going to spend a good bit of time as well driving from point A to point B, just so that you can see different things in the park. And a place to stay there that I would recommend is also one of the better national park lodges, the Old Faithful Inn. With any of these park lodges, I mean, we're already in June. You're going to have to book immediately, and you may have to hope for a cancellation, but it's worth a shot.
And you've got me thinking, okay, Old Faithful, it pops off every 90 minutes.
It does.
You can set your watch to it. How does it do that?
You're asking the wrong person there in terms of that kind of a scientific question.
I just figured maybe you'd know.
Nope.
Hot boiling water. We'll have to go and find out.
In terms of trivia around that, though, 20, 30, 40 years ago, it used to pop off every 60 minutes. The eruptions are slowing down, and there is something in the topography, the terrain, that is causing the eruptions basically to be more and more spread out. So there's definitely things going on underground, and they're probably worth exploring. I just haven't explored them.
Absolutely. Elaine LaBalme, our contributing editor and travel editor, is with us here on Essential Pittsburgh. You like Rocky Mountain National Park because it's easy to get to, so it's not just that Rocky Mountain High.
Well, anyone who remembers that John Denver song probably thinks that's part of the piece of the puzzle there, but it's not just that. The neat thing about this park, well, one of many, is that it is easy to get to. It's about an hour from Denver. So if you're flying to the West Coast, you can fly into Denver and you're in a national park in no time. These other ones, Yosemite, Yellowstone, the ones we're going to talk about, it takes much longer to get to them. But a neat thing to do in Rocky Mountain National Park is to take the Trail Ridge Road, and you stop at so many different overlooks with absolutely stunning vista. The entire park is above 7,500 feet in altitude, so it really is a Rocky Mountain high, and it's going to take you a couple days to get acclimated to it. I remember on my one visit, I was only there for 2-3 days with some friends who actually had a lodge just outside the park in Estes Park, and I think by the time I left, I still wasn't really quite used to the altitude.
You get a little dizzy, a little...
short of breath.
Short of breath.
For sure.
And you have to be careful how you exert yourself.
Absolutely, because, until you're really comfortable with it, you shouldn't be doing a 4 or 5 or 6 hour hike. And there are many hikes there, and 300 miles of trails. Maybe you take it easy and just take in the alpine flowers and just take a little walk as opposed to a strenuous hike. If you're going to be there for a week, you'll have more opportunities.
It's hard to choose between the many wonderful national parks in Utah, but your favorite is Zion.
Absolutely. This is just the sweetest little national park. These great sandstone cliffs. I mean, you drive in and the stone is pink and orange and red and purple. And the light that is on this stone, it is just a feast for the senses. Love Zion Park. And I don't say that lightly because you've got, Arches Park, National Park in Utah. There are many great national parks, but I think this one rises to the top. And one of the reasons may be is that there is a hike there called Angel's Landing. Has a 1,500-foot elevation gain. So it's, again, that's not for wimps either. And as you're close to the top, there is this land bridge that is maybe 10 to 12 feet wide, and the sheer drop on either side is about 1,000 feet. I remember looking at that and thinking, I can't walk across it. I'm going to crawl. And I was absolutely ready to crawl until my husband looked at me and said, you can't walk across this thing. And then I thought, all right, ain't wimping out. And I walked across it. But one of the scariest moments of my life. Then you have to pretty much boulder another, I don't know how many feet elevation gain to get to the very top. But the view at the top, it's kissed by the sun. And it is like nothing you've ever seen. I can still remember sitting up there, crisscross applesauce eating my sandwich. I will never forget that moment at the top of Angel's Landing. So what I would say is suck it up if you can. Cross the land bridge. Make it all the way to the top.
Now, Glacier National Park in Montana borders on a national park in Canada. So is that kind of a two-for-one visit?
Well, I think that's exactly what you should make it. It's right next door to Waterton Lakes National Park in Canada. You have to have your passport, of course. Remember that. But the neatest thing probably about this national park, and I don't say this lightly because I know when you go to national parks, you should be hiking and biking and exploring the great outdoors. But there is a road in this park that many of us have heard of called the Going to the Sun Road. And it's a 50-mile drive that goes literally in and out and through the mountains. And this is one of the most stunning drives anywhere in America. So that's probably the first thing you want to do at Glacier National Park. And after that, you've got, forest meadows and, mountain lakes and tons of other stunning stuff, 700 plus miles of trail. So you can easily spend a week between parks on both sides of the border there, and it's well worth your time.
And get to Glacier National Park before it's gone.
There you go. Absolutely.
Elaine LaBalm is a contributing editor for the e-zine Pop City, tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town, and she is our travel correspondent. Elaine, thank you so much as always.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. Tomorrow on the show, former Pennsylvania Governor Dick Thornburgh is our guest. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening. Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High.